Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, September 8, 2023. Sudan's paramilitary rapid support force dismisses General Burhan's decree dissolving the group.
He has nor the legitimacy or the power to issue it, let alone the ability to act upon it. Al-Burhan has not dared to issue this decision until after he has escaped.
And the UN says funding gaps could force many families in South Sudan go without food.
So meaning that we cannot provide the services we had intended to provide. In addition to that, now we have this additional humanitarian caseload, the returnees, many of whom are vulnerable, given the difficult situation that they are coming from in Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces have downplayed a recent decision by the head of the Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, to dissolve the group and abolish the 2017 Act, which established RSF as part of the Sudan Armed Forces. RSF's external and foreign relations advisor describes the decision as illegal and baseless. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
The external and foreign relations advisor of the RSF, Ibrahim Mukhayr, told VOA that General al-Burhan cannot unilaterally dissolve the RSF.
He has nor the legitimacy or the power to issue it, let alone the ability to act upon it. Al-Burhan has not dared to issue this decision until after he has escaped and dwelt in a city he believes is out of the reach of the RSF.
On Wednesday, al-Burhan issued two separate decrees dissolving the rapid support forces and abolishing the 2017 law that established the group as part of the Sudan's National Army. The decrees also instructed the General Command of the Sudan Armed Forces, the Secretariat of the Sovereign Council, and other relevant bodies to implement the decisions. The Sovereign Council accused the RSF of rebelling against the state, committing severe human rights violations against civilians, and deliberately damaging the country's infrastructure. Al-Burhan decree also stated that RSF's actions violated the objectives and principles outlined in the 2017 law. Sudanese lawyer Abdul Basit Al-Haj told VOA the decision is too late, adding that pro-democracy forces in Sudan had demanded for dissolution of the RSF. He blamed General al-Burhan for delaying the process.
They commit too many crimes, they don't have any legitimacy, they are not representing people, and they are not also have legitimacy to govern or to participate in any political, operation or everything. The only one way that now people need is to integrate the rest of this militia into the SAF and to build new Sudanese armed forces.
The RSF maintains that its forces is a legitimate group based on a 2017 law enacted by parliament during the administration of ousted President Omar al-Bashir. The latest decrees coincided with sanctions imposed by the Biden administration against the RSF deputy commander Abdulrahim Hamdan Dogolo for allegedly committing human rights violations and crimes against civilians in Darfur. Khartoum resident Al-Mansour Nasir says he believes both sides committed crimes against civilians.
The army is the only obstacle that prevents the people from accessing better livelihood, democracy, humanity and good governance in Sudan.
Fighting between the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces began on April 15th following a disagreement on the process of reintegrating of the paramilitary group into Sudan's National Army. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A Sudanese legal expert and author who wrote a book on the origin and evolution of the paramilitary force says The decree to dissolve the group presents several legal and procedural complications. Salman Mohammed Salman says it will be difficult to enforce the decision.
Look at it from a number of angles. First, the legal angle that you cannot repeal a law by a decree. The law, the Rapid Support Forces Act, was passed by the Legislative Assembly of Bashir's government, and then it was signed by Bashir and entered into force in February 2017. You need the legislative body, constitutionally established legal body, to abolish the law. You cannot just pass a decree to abolish a law. And related to this issue is the authority of Burhan to issue this kind of decree, because the decrees are issued by, under the constitutional decree, the document of now of 2019, are issued by the Sovereign Council as a body and then signed by Burhan. Here we don't have a sovereign, there is nothing about a sovereign sovereign council, it's just a decree issued by Burhan. So legally it's quite flawed. It doesn't really stand on any legal grounds. And the second thing is the implementation angle. I mean, enforcement. How do you dissolve 130,000-140,000 army with a decree that you issued from wherever you issued from, Qatar or no? I think it looks very absurdly simplistic. I mean, how do you enforce it? They're occupying two-thirds, half of Khartoum or two-thirds of Khartoum. And then you just issue a decree saying that they have been dissolved. They have been in battles. They are surrounding their army headquarters. They are surrounding the armored corps. And they're everywhere. And so it's a kind of very simplistic. I mean, how do you enforce it? And the third angle is the credibility of Burhan issuing this decree. The Rapid Support Forces Act 2017 had Article 5, which establishes the right of the President of the Republic to merge the Rapid Support Forces with the Sudanese Armed Forces. That was in 2017. Burhan came in 2019 and deleted this article altogether, which means that the Rapid Support Forces are no longer, there is no authority in the whole country or constitutional structure to merge the Rapid Support Forces with the army. And here he was the one who issued that decree to amending the law. And now he comes 4 years later, not only reinstate the merger article, but goes further and say, oh, I'm hereby repealing the law and abolishing the Rapid Support Forces. As I said, it looks naively, absurdly simplistic decree, probably forced on him or probably even issued without him knowing it.
But what are the consequences of this development for the current conflict in Sudan that the RSF, according to these decrees, does not have a legal basis to exist as a body of force anymore? Will it help resolve the conflict or escalate it further?
No, I think it will escalate the problem, because what is the Burhan's and the Islamists going to do about the meeting scheduled for Nairobi and another meeting in Jeddah? Are they going to say, oh, we are not attending because we have already, by the way, dissolved the RSF, so there is no point in having the meeting? I am waiting to see what they're going to say, because they have put themselves in a very clumsy position. You agree to the Jeddah process. You agree to the Nairobi process that has barely taken off. And then you come and say, oh, by the way, Jeddah process, by the way, Nairobi process, I have dissolved the RSF. That's going to not only complicate things, that's going to embarrass them internationally. They'll be seen as very unserious, unserious people, because the whole world is trying to help them. The regional neighbors are trying to help them, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Saudi Arabia, now Kenya, and the U.S., the European Union. And now you say, oh, by the way, I have dissolved them. So what are the consequences of your dissolution? They don't exist. So they don't exist. Who am I negotiating with? Who are the two parties that you are mediating between?
That's Salman Mohammed Salman, Sudanese legal expert and author of a book titled The Rapid Support Forces, Origins, Expansion, and the Path to April War. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. state of Virginia. Still on Sudan, the United Arab Emirates has set up a failed hospital and is distributing aid in Chad to assist refugees fleeing alleged crimes against humanity in neighboring Sudan. However, a recent report by the Wall Street Journal says the UAE is also supplying weapons to the paramilitary group, allegedly carrying out many of the atrocities. The UAE denies the accusations. Henry Wilkins reports from Adre, Chad.
Hundreds of thousands of refugees are in Chad after fleeing atrocities allegedly committed by ethnic Arab militias, whom they refer to as Janjaweed. The Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, which is fighting the military in Sudan's civil war, was created from and is linked to the Janjaweed. It's led by Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, better known as Hameti. One refugee described how her community came under a Janjaweed attack.
They were dressed like normal citizens. Two or three of them started killing and attacking people. That's what I saw. Those Janjaweed members were burning our houses, so we started running. They killed a lot of people.
In May, representatives from a United Arab Emirates aid group visited Kufrun to draw attention to its efforts to help refugees like Badr. As the UAE promotes its humanitarian efforts in Chad, an August article by the Wall Street Journal, a US newspaper, said the UAE was supplying weapons to the RSF. The UAE has denied the allegations. VOA asked an expert on the conflict whether the allegations, if true, could prolong the conflict. Bakari El-Midni is a Sudan expert at Long Island University.
Sudan will never find peace if we don't find a way to deal with the UAE, i.e., I have been saying this like multiple times. Political leaders, whoever is going to be our state men, state women running the country, they need to go directly and sit down with UAE leaders. What exactly do you want from Sudan?
Much of Sudan's gold output, which is largely controlled by RSF leader Hameti, is sold in the UAE. The UAE could gain on a few fronts from its reported support of the RSF in Sudan, said Brendan Nivelle, a PhD candidate in political science who specializes in the Horn of Africa.
I think it's a mix of political and economic interests. I think the UAE wanting to get rid of all of the Islamist elements from the former regime in Sudan. And then the economic aspect, Hameti's still, I mean, for years, he's been using the UAE as a platform for his financial activities.
Adam Abdurrahim Yunus and his family also fled Sudan because of atrocities blamed on the RSF. He echoes the feelings of many Sudanese who say Hameti should never rule the country because of the crimes committed by the RSF and Janjaweed. He says the Janjaweed are killing people and waging war in Darfur, and that their main goal has always been for Hameti to take control of the country away from the army. What he's succeeded in doing, however, is uniting the country against him, meaning he will struggle to rule. In a statement made to VOA, the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs said, "The UAE categorically refutes the claims and allegations detailed in your story. The UAE has not supplied arms and ammunition to any of the warring parties in Sudan since the outbreak of the conflict." The UAE has also set up a field hospital to help refugees in the same Chadian town from where the weapons allegedly supplied to the RSF originated. It has called for an end to the fighting in Sudan. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the United Nations says its funding gaps could result into massive starvation in South Sudan. Find out why after this break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says over 4 million South Sudanese could face hunger due to funding gaps. Some internally displaced persons in the South Sudan's capital, Juba, are expressing fear over the announcement by the United Nations officials. For VOA News, Manyang, David Mayar reports from Juba.
Hundreds of internally displaced persons sheltering at a UN-run camp in Bentiu protested Thursday against a decision by the World Food Programme to cut ration of food distributed to vulnerable groups in Unity State. Peter Van Der Auriet, the UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan, says aid agencies have requested $1.7 billion for operations in the country, but received only 46% of that amount.
So meaning that we cannot provide the services we had intended to provide. In addition to that, now we have this additional humanitarian caseload, the returnees, many of whom are vulnerable, given the difficult situation that they are coming from in Sudan. So we are simply stretched, and the money is not there.
The UN says it will continue to support 3.2 million people who face the highest levels of food insecurity. Some internally displaced persons say they are worried about the future following UN's announcement. Rebecca Yom, who lives in Minkaman IDP camp, says her family may starve if aid agencies stop providing food aid.
We have not received food for the last 2 months. That is a challenging situation for us, IDPs. We are experiencing drought. Please, do not stop providing food for us. There is no one who can live without food.
Mary Adao is another IDP in Minkaman. She says some IDPs who were previously producing their food could not do so this year due to irregular rainfall.
As you know, we usually harvest our sorghum in August. Now we are trying to plant some sorghum and there is no rain. I see that there will be no good harvest this year, and in the coming year, we expect to see hunger because we have produced nothing.
Manasseh Lomulewaya is the head of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission. He says peace and stability could move the country away from donor dependency syndrome.
We are all aware that funding internationally is going down because of geopolitics and other natural calamities that are affecting many parts of the world. And so the only thing we can do, totality, is an environment that is enabling our people to work for themselves. We need peace consistently, then we will be able to stand on our own. However, in this short time, we need to be supported.
South Sudan produces thousands of barrels of crude oil per day, yet the country is not able to pay civil servants and members of the security forces. The U.S. ambassador to South Sudan recently urged the government of South Sudan to be transparent with revenues from the oil sector. Albino Akol, South Sudan's humanitarian affairs minister, says the government has approved some funds to respond to the humanitarian crisis in the country.
Recently, when this influx of people coming from Sudan, continues, the government of South Sudan first allocated $5.3 million for the response, and then recently, it also approved another $10 million for the response.
Akol says the government's plan to support the IDPs and returnees, but cautions that the government is also overwhelmed by the increasing humanitarian crisis happening in the country, making its efforts appear too little to match the huge need. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still on money matters, the Outlawed People's Coalition for Civic Action, or PCCA, is calling on the government of South Sudan to increase salaries of civil servants and security forces by 5,000%. South Sudan's Minister for Public Service says he is pushing for the cabinet to approve more increase of salaries. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly approved a 400% salary increment for civil servants and the armed forces in the 2023-2024 fiscal year budget. But Abraham Awolich, a member of the PCCA, says the 400% salary increment is not enough due to the high cost of living and the country's IFA inflation.
The PCCA instead calls for a salary adjustment of 5,000%. This would bring someone earning a minimum wage of 2,400 per month to 120,000 SSP, which is an equivalent of about $100 per month. The ideal salary adjustment would be 180,000 SSP, which would be equivalent to $150. But we understand that the country is experiencing financial difficulties.
Rajab Mohandis, another member of the PCCA, says South Sudan is rich enough to pay higher salaries.
We are talking about a country with resources and a country that is able to provide it, to pay itself or pay its legislators a minimum of $15,000 for each individual. And this $15,000 paid to one legislator would actually pay up to 150,000 civil servants if the salary is adjusted to 5,000%.
Lawmakers loyal to the SPLM in opposition walked out of the parliament in August protesting against the 400% salary increment during passing of the 2023-2024 budget. The SPLM-IO national legislators proposed a 600% increment, but the lawmakers representing Kiir's party argued that the government does not have the resources to pay huge salaries. Gabriel March Garang works with the Jonglei State Ministry of Education. Garang says the approved salary adjustment will not address the high cost of living in South Sudan.
So I don't really agree with those who indeed initiated this initiative to increase the salaries of civil servants by 400%.
John Agan is the chairperson of the Information Committee in the National Legislative Assembly and the Parliament's spokesperson. Agan says the government has 5 million employees and 5,000% salary increment could not be realistic.
Our people in South Sudan are under faith. We know this. And by the fact that the government took initiative of improving it to 400% this time, is giving us a promise that tomorrow it might be 600%. And this is how we stand to defend.
Bangasi Joseph Bakasoro, the National Minister for Public Service and Human Resource Development, admits that the salary increment of 400% is not enough.
When we plan and there is no resource to cover the plan, then you again revisit the plan to adjust it according to what you have in hand. That is what the Minister of Finance has done, and we are going to respect it. And then maybe in the supplementary budget, we shall improve the salary a bit gradually. Change has to go gradually based on what we have in hand.
President Salva Kiir recently instructed the country's new foreign minister to clear 27 months of salary arrears for South Sudanese diplomats representing country around the world. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
We love to hear your remarks on some of the issues in this broadcast. My colleague, Nabil Biagio, is ready with this week's listener comment. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Many of you wrote to us this week about news and events we covered in this broadcast. We start with these voice messages.
Hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. My name is Musalingani Moses William, living in Juba. I want just to appreciate VOA Africa for the well job that they are doing. More especially, John Tanza, Nabil Biagio, and Colonel Van Damme. Well done job that you're doing. And also, my appreciation goes to the reporters of South Sudan that the work that they're doing is very important and they're reporting accurate information without any segregation, corruption reports. Much thanks goes to them. Long live Africa. Long live South Sudan.
Hello, VOA Africa. My name is Robert Salah, a South Sudanese refugee living in northern Uganda in a rural area called Luruja, Oriama sub-county. Some of us are very intelligent and even they are great people. Like you can see, I was been following the history of those basketball players. Some of them were refugees before. As you have seen in the picture below, this is 12 years old boy who can able to program like security lights to come up with unique things in the computer. And even He did not go to school, and imagine if he was given an opportunity to go to school. I just need your help to be our voices, to forward our messages to our government of South Sudan. Let him also consider us who are living here in refugee camp.
Bol Reng Thiong says, in my area, people are celebrating South Sudan's qualification as the best country in Africa in terms of basketball, and they have qualified for the Olympics in Paris in 2024. This fan says, this is Tong Chuni Yong Kwai from Juba, South Sudan. Congratulations to the newly appointed Akobo County Commissioner in Jonglei State, Honorable Pok Nyang. I want to thank His Excellency General Salva Kiir Mayardit, President of the Republic of South Sudan, and First Vice President of the Republic of South Sudan, His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar Teng, for appointing the right person to the right place. Another fan says, my name is Bol Manyar from Juba. The arrest and detention of businessman Ayi Duang Ayi for defying court orders set a precedent and serve as a reminder to those who believe they're above the law. As a law graduate, I am pleased to see our judicial system regaining its independence and the trust of the citizens who had lost faith in it. Another listener says, I am James Roy Majok from Mayom County in Unity State. As I write from Unity State, we are facing a severe shortage of food commodities, and prices are rising due to the unavailability of stocks across the entire region. This situation has been ongoing for several months since the Sudanese border was closed because of ongoing conflicts between paramilitary forces and the Sudanese army. People in Unity State have limited access to food commodities, including assistance from humanitarian agencies. Samuel Remo in Yei writes, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. The African summit held in Nairobi, Kenya, to address climate change was beneficial, as it allowed common citizens on the ground to grasp the importance of these discussions. Peter Gonyanyang Majongdul in the West Nile city of Arua says, the decision made by the military junta in Gabon to release the ousted president from house arrest demonstrates political maturity and patriotism towards the country. Kudos to the junta for this brilliant move. This SSIF fan says, dear Nabil Biagio, I am Thon Mamour in Kampala. The economic conference in Juba may not yield positive results in resolving the economic crisis in the country. The only way forward is the implementation of the revitalized peace agreements roadmap that aligns with the expectations of South Sudanese citizens. Thanks. This fan says, hello, VOA. It's disheartening to hear about the shooting incident in Lobonok involving a chief as the victim. My advice to our people is to embrace peace and resolve conflicts through legal means rather than resorting to violence. Let us remember that we could be victims one day too. Thanks to VOA for keeping us informed. I'm Robert Nyombe in Kakamega, Kenya. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
And I will repeat, keep your comments brief, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, September 8, 2023. We now leave you with Jamnazi Africa and the song I'm Not Sober. Been listening to Jamnazi Africa and the song I'm Not Sober. Don't forget to visit VOA Africa for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your sober host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Justin, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
some hunter.